Hello, my name is Mark Adams, and welcome to Mark's Mess vs. the Evolutionary War, the 12-issue limited podcast looking at the Marvel 1988 annuals with the banner headline, The Evolutionary War, and this is episode 12. I've reached the end, and today we're going to look at not the main story, but the backup story in the end of each and every annual, which is a High Evolutionary story himself, which deals with the history of the Marvel Universe. Within that time frame anyway. Last time we talked, I was about to go to Belfast Comic Con, and I did indeed go. It was on for 2 days, Saturday and Sunday, and me and my daughter went for one of those days. We went for the Saturday. We decided not to buy a ticket online, after all, they were sold out, but we decided to pop along to the King's Hall in Belfast. We went along like a young Professor Allen and Emily. First thing we discovered is the queue. I had to stand outside for 2 hours. Let me emphasize that. We had to stand outside in the rain, in the Belfast rain, for 2 hours. That bit wasn't pleasant. But all in all, I think our experience of Comic-Con was, when we got into the Comic-Con, we had to walk through all the stalls. This is the first time I've ever been at a Comic-Con, so it was quite shocked in how many different stalls there were and how what the cost was for things. But eventually we made our way through all the different exhibits and stalls, and we got to where the creators were. We saw some of the stars from Red Dwarf. We saw Hannah from S Club 7. And we also met some of the people who published their own works. Specifically, we bought some comics from Promila Publishing. They do Celtic Knights, which is like a cross between Avengers and Father Ted. That's the way they sold it to me, and I bought it. Talked to the artist Lee Bradley for a while, and he was quite generous with his time, even though we weren't spending money with him. And I really wish I didn't spend all my money, because by the time I got to Ken Gregory, who wrote Polaris Whisper, I wanted to buy his novel. In fact, I will in a couple of weeks' time when I get my next paycheck in, but I thought I'd give him a shout out here. Polaris Whisper is a novel, and you can get that either in paperback or in Kindle form. It was good to meet real creators like that, and having it open and having them friendly. Another thing was, the people there were so friendly. We were in the queue for 2 hours, and it was really miserable with the rain. But the people around us were great. There were a couple of guys in front of us, young fellas, who came in suits. One of them had the idea of being the Mad Hatter from Alice in Wonderland. And they were good fun, because they even tried to start a Mexican wave, which flopped after a few dozen people. But it was good crack. A couple behind us, a married couple, and talking to them about their comic experiences. And they kept us in the queue and kept talking to us. And then there's a fella just behind that who'd been to many Comic Cons. The last one he was at was a New York Comic Con. So he was able to relate his experience. And the third thing that I was impressed with was how many people came dressed up. You had so many Spider-Man and Batman, all different characters. A lot of manga that I don't really know anything about, so I didn't quite know who they were. But it was really good that people took the time. And I had my first encounter with the Frozen story with Elsa. There were a couple of Elsas there, which my daughter was able to tell me about. And since then, I've watched the movie. And yes, I know, I have to let it go, let it go. So I really enjoyed it. My daughter, unfortunately, became sick and threw up in the car on the way home. It's okay, I did the Batman thing. I had my bag ready for her to throw up in, because she was starting to feel unwell while we were there. But I think we will go back next year if it's on, and why wouldn't it be on? But let's get to the comics we're talking about today. We're going to be looking at the backup story of the High Evolutionary, and we'll look at two more comics that came out around about that time. Backup story was written by Mark Gruwald. He is best known, I suppose, in my circles for a long run in Captain America, as well as Quasar. If you want to know more about Quasar, go to the Quantum Cast on Two True Freaks, which deals with the story of Quasar, especially around where Mark Gruwald was writing it. Pencils were mainly Ron Lynn, who started his career around about this time, and he was heavily involved in the latter part of penciling Infinity Gauntlet, and he did the whole of Infinity War and Infinity Crusade, which at the time were big, massive crossovers. Three of the issues were penciled by Paris Collins, who broke into Marvel Comics on this after being with DC on the Blue Beetle run. Inks were mainly done by Tony DeZunca, I think, and he's had a long career. He had a long career at that time with both DC and Marvel, inking many of the issues. And Jim Sinclair had one issue in that. So these are split off into 11 different chapters, and I'll go through each one at a time. And they do present a beautiful history of the Marvel Universe. And I really did appreciate the time and effort that went into it. Chapter 1, The Gift. September 1928, London. Herbert Edgar Wyndham is in his basement trying to accelerate cellular mutation in rats with only little success. He is invited to an international conference on genetics and uses his family's money to get there. He attends along with peers such as Shinsky, who became a member of Hydra, and Zola, who also did. In fact, Zola is the one in Captain America. And he became friends with Jonathan Drew. Jonathan Drew, of course, is the father of Jessica Drew, the first Spider-Woman. After Professor Zinsky, who is the main speaker at the event, rebuffs the theories that Wyndham brings, Wyndham meets a mysterious stranger who sparkles a lot, who gives him a blueprint for the breakdown of the genetic code. That brings us to the end of that chapter. Chapter 2, Pet Project, May 1930. At Oxford University, Wyndham has a run-in with his professor, Dearden, and leaves university. Months later, he has his first success by evolving a Dalmatian dog. The mutated dog becomes more human, but escapes only to be killed by nervous locals who are unaware of what this strange creature is. While visiting his friend Jonathan Drew, they plan to set up a laboratory where Wyndham can study his genetics and Jonathan can study arachnids in a tract of land that his wife has inherited in the Balkans. Chapter 3, The Man, the Mine, the Mountain. It's July 1930. At the new lab at Windergore Mountain, Wyndham discovers uranium, and he and Drew mine it and get rich. They use the money to pay Horace Grabshield to design a citadel of science, and Grabshield includes a space drive engine. Horace Grabshield is another scientist from this time, really confusing history, but he becomes the father of Marvel Boy. He gets disillusioned by the Nazis, and he builds a spaceship and he travels with his son to Uranus. No jokes, please. And he discovers a tribe of people there. His son eventually becomes Marvel Boy, and that goes into the history of Quasar, I do believe. I don't know much about it there. The young Jessica Drew, the aforementioned daughter of Jonathan Drew, is scared by a scream, and the men look in the grounds at night. Wyndham bumps into a mysterious glowing-eyed benefactor who leads him underground to meet the subterraneans who will work on the citadel of science as his slaves. The weird guy disappears again. End of chapter. Chapter 4. Blood Drawn, Blood Spilt. March 1931, nearly a year later, the subterraneans work tirelessly building the citadel of science, much to Jonathan Drew's unease about the use of slaves. While his daughter Jessica is playing outside, she falls sick. It is radiation poisoning from the natural uranium in the earth. Her father uses a spider-derived serum, but it needs time to work, so she is placed in suspended animation. Miriam Drew is distraught and runs outside, where she is attacked by a mysterious beast. Chapter 5, Silver and Crimson. April 1931. While searching for the beast, Wyndham is attacked by a human dog reminding him of the evolved Dalmatian, but dismisses the chance that it is a werewolf. Back at the Citadel, he finds that Jonathan Drew has left to go back to America after his wife Steph and his daughter's accident. He's got nothing to stay here for. Wyndham then creates a protective suit to help him if he is attacked again, and this of course becomes the High Evolutionary suit. Just as he completes the suit, after months of work, the Beast attacks again inside the Citadel, and Wyndham uses a suit and traps the creature. Chapter 6, Kindred Spirits, March 1932. While garbed in his pink armor, Wyndham is busy evolving animals to create his new men. The latest new man is Bova, well, a new woman I suppose, who he leads to the education suite. Bova is an evolved cow, and she plays a role later on in the Marvel Universe. Wyndham next goes to the werewolf, who transforms back into the neighbouring barn, who has a family curse of werewolfism. Unexpectedly, Jonathan Drew appears, but explains that he is not Jonathan Drew, but the spirit of Magus, a 6th century monk and disciple of Morgan Le Fay, who has possessed Jonathan Drew. He is here to help fight against Chthon, an evil demon who is trapped in Windigore Mountain. Wyndham is skeptical about the supernatural beings and refuses to leave, surmising that Jonathan Drew is suffering a mental breakdown. Chapter 7, Demon Knight. Over a decade later. Under Jonathan Magus Drew's direction, Wyndham trains the new men into knights, ready to fight. I'm going to start calling Wyndham the High Evolutionary from now on. A heavily pregnant gypsy woman wanders into the Citadel. The demon Chthon uses the time to launch an attack. The new men, who are the High Evolutionary's knights, are sent out to fight, but it is a hopeless defense. Magus releases Jonathan Drew and searches for whoever is responsible, and finds a werewolf barn using a magic book to try and rid himself and his family from the Lupine curse. Magus takes over the barn's body to incant a spell of binding. As he recites it, a flash of light hits one of the twins that have just been born to the gypsy woman. Chthon is vanquished, and the new men celebrate. The new mother, Magda, as well. And we later find out the twins are Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch, the latter being the one touched by Chthon. Chapter 8, All My Children. The High Evolutionary mourns his dead new men from the battle. Magda, the mother of the twins, has run away, leaving the twins in the care of Lady Bova, the evolved cow. The High Evolutionary agrees to search for suitable guardians, while Magnus, still in the body of Jonathan Drew, informs Wyndham that now the danger is past, he is leaving, and giving Drew back his body. Two new visitors come in, Robert and Madeline Frank. Madeline is about to give birth, and the High Evolutionary, as Bova calls him, decides to convince the couple that the twins are theirs as well. So, taking the twins and giving them to this couple, and convincing them they had triplets. Yeah, he's meant to be smart. Unfortunately, Madeline's child is stillborn, and she dies from the strain. Bova presents Robert with the twins, but he is so distraught at his wife's death that he runs away at super speed. We later find that these are 2 heroes from the Second World War. The Whizzer, the unfortunately named Whizzer, and I think it's Miss America. The High Evolutionary revives Jessica Drew. Remember her? When Bova tells him the news, the High Evolutionary presents the twins to Diego and Maria Maximoff from a band of gypsies who are passing through. Chapter 9, The Final Frontier. And this takes place just at the end of Thor 134 to 135. This was one where Jane Foster goes and works for the High Evolutionary, educating his new men. And one of them turns out to be a real monster, and Thor's in there to help stop it. The High Evolutionary launches his citadel into space, looking for a new home for his new men away from Earth. Finding a world, he settles anew, creating a new batch of evolved animals. But rebellion spreads, and we end up in the issues of the Hulk, Tales to Astonish 94 to 96. And the Hulk aids the High Evolutionary again to control his new men. The High Evolutionary needs to heal, so he uses his evolutionary accelerator and evolves into an energy being and flies away. Chapter 10, The Son of Earth. The highly evolved High Evolutionary creates a space vessel from asteroids. He de-evolves to a more human but still advanced body. He creates Counter-Earth at the other side of the sun from Earth and starts over again, but the man-beast rebels again. Him, who will later become Adam Warlock, emerges from his cocoon and helps the High Evolutionary defeat the man-beast, who escapes to the Counter-Earth below. Him tells the High Evolutionary he will track down the man-beast, and before he goes to Counter-Earth, the High Evolutionary agrees to leave Counter-Earth in the hands of the now named Adam Warlock. If you want to know more about Adam Warlock, you can go along to resurrectionsadamwarlock.tumblr.com, where there's a terrific podcast all about the life and times of Adam Warlock. But an attack from Galactus causes the High Evolutionary to go back to Counter-Earth to defend it. Warlock is furious that the High Evolutionary breaks his word and attacks him, thinking the High Evolutionary had destroyed the now missing Counter-Earth. Warlock then kills the High Evolutionary. Chapter 11, Beyond Life. The High Evolutionary is revived by her, who with the Thing, Alisa Masters, Aletta Starhawk, and Moondragon. They investigate the missing Counter-Earth and discover that it is taken by a being who is very highly advanced as part of their collection. This is part of Marvel 2-in-1, 62 and 63. This unhinges the High Evolutionary, who wants to die, but his armor will not let him. He enlists the Hulk again, Incredible Hulk 266, to destroy his armor so he can devolve out of existence, because the armor is keeping him alive in any way necessary. And then he re-evolves. The High Evolutionary in one panel decides to further evolve humanity, leading to the Evolutionary War, which is where we came in episode 1. I really did enjoy this because it was a good history of Marvel Comics. Some things I had to research and didn't know much about. Other things I vaguely knew bits about. I like the way it draws in issues like Thor, Hulk, Fantastic Four, Marvel 2-in-1, even Adam Warlock's own comic. The artwork is very satisfying. The artwork is really melds into the artwork that was done in those other comics, and I enjoyed reading that. I did wish I read it in the first episode, for the first episode, instead of for this one, but that can't be helped. Maybe I'll not make that mistake another time. Is this a hint of things to come? I don't know. The writing was very sympathetic to what had been actually established in the Marvel Universe. And even when you get to the Thor issue 134 and 135, you get a wee background to the High Evolutionary, and it's basically the first few chapters of this story. Less detail, so it's a deconstructed storyline of what already has been there. It was well researched, and Mark Gruenwald was fantastic writing this. It kept me interested. There were bits that were highly dense and I had to read through them a couple of times to get the idea specifically of what was happening. But otherwise, I enjoyed it. Two other comics that were within the Evolutionary War. First was another annual that maybe didn't quite fit in, the ALF annual. Way back in 1988, if you wanted your science fiction comedy show creature from another world come to our world. You watched Alf. At the time I watched it and I found it really funny. It was the show, it was one of those shows like Morgan Mindy or Third Rock from the Sun that just had a fish out of water vibe. But Alf, instead of being this innocent, was basically a con man. He was a smart talking guy, but he was also a puppet. I watched a couple of episodes on YouTube and boy has it aged. But at the time I loved it and I couldn't get enough. Anyway, in the annual, Daniel has several stories and High Evolutionary just pops up in one short story. The High Evolutionary warns Alf about interfering with development of humanity, and at the end of it, that story, it turns out that it was just a dream from Alf reading too many Marvel annuals. So it was basically an advert for the other annuals. So if you were into Alf and not anything else, why, I don't know, you would have. Cute, but not necessary for reading, and I don't think it's in the huge, massive omnibus of the Evolutionary War. Another one that I don't think is in it is the What If. What If was a series of comics that Marvel had, a bit like DC's Elseworld, which took things, well, what if this happened differently? What if Spider-Man joined the Fantastic Four to become the Fantastic Five? What if Magneto actually killed Professor Xavier? What if the Hulk was killed by Wolverine, or Wolverine killed by the Hulk? And these things, what ifs. Sometimes I wonder, what ifs? The alternative realities to what actually goes on in the main 616 Marvel universe. In fact, some of them, the stories and the what ifs, have their own Earth number. In this, it's what if the Avengers lost the Evolutionary War? What if Volume 2, Number 1, July 1989? This one's 50p. This is just an ordinary comic book and not an annual. Where the a year before, the annuals were 50p. That's just... price has gone mad, I'm telling you. Inflation. Whew. Anyway, the gene bomb goes off. The Avengers weren't able to stop it. And humanity evolves to have big heads. And milliners rejoice everywhere. And we discover that Wolverine is the most evolved human. That's basically it. A lot of these what-if stories are very much throwaway. Very few of them mattered in the long run. The best one, because it mattered in the long run, was Spider, the one that introduced Spider-Girl into it. And then that long-running series. Oh, that was so good. That's about it. Thank you for listening. If you've listened to all 12 episodes, I'm sorry, but thank you for listening. At the end of every podcast, I like to do a promo for another podcast. This is going to be self-serving because it's going to be my new podcast, and it's going to be about the next year's The Marvel Comics, the Marvel Annuals for 1989, with the banner headline Atlantis Attacks. Hopefully you'll join me for those ones, and thank you very much for listening. The music we've used is from markwoodward.com, so thanks to him. So this has been Mark's Mess versus Evolutionary War, and thank you for listening.
What did you do when Atlantis attacked?
I donned my iron armor to fight with Namor the Submariner!
That was Iron Man. What did you do when Atlantis attacked?
I gathered a group of heroes to fight against the Serpent Crown with my mighty shield held high!
That's Captain America. Try again!
I spun a web any size?
Spider-Man.
I punished the drug dealers?
I have no idea. But are you just doing another podcast?
Another podcast? Yes. Mark's Mess vs. Atlantis Attacks, a 15-part limited podcast series examining the Marvel annuals that have the banner heading of Atlantis Attacks. A story joining the Marvel heroes against the Serpent Crown. Find it at marksmesspodcast.blogspot.co.uk, on Twitter at marksmesspodcast, and on iTunes by searching Mark's Mess.
Where's my fiber?